Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Today's factory jobs not like yesterday's, especially when it comes to wages. What happens when a worker-centric NLRB levels the playing field? And today on the show, the Communication Workers of America and the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. Welcome to the Tuesday, January 11th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Frank Matthews will be joining us as our first guest, longtime contributor and supporter of America's Workforce. He is the administrative director of the CWA, Communication Workers of America. CWA-union.org is their national website. And Frank is the administrative director for District 4. That includes five states in the Midwest: Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois. Number one thing we're going to talk about is voting. The Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, two pieces of legislation that President Biden referred to today. And there's been some talk the last couple of weeks of eliminating the filibuster, at least to get some voter rights legislation passed. And like I said, there's two good pieces here. And if you scan the country, we have a chunk of states that have really turned back the clock on voting. Altogether, 400 voter suppression bills have been passed or introduced. Many of them have passed in state legislatures ever since the November 2020 election, which Donald Trump still says he won. So we'll talk about those pieces of legislation and what the CWA and other unions are doing about it. We'll also talk about the PRO Act. And I'll tell you, the CWA has been on this from day one. And if you go to the homepage, you will read about what the PRO Act is and what it will do. Number one, make it easier to bargain, help strengthen protections for workers forming a union, prevent the misclassification of workers as independent contractors, get rid of right-to-work laws. And you can mobilize right on that website. Just check out CWA-union.org. And speaking of organizing, wow, CWA is doing a great job. In the past week, a majority of AT&T in-home expert workers in Maryland and Nevada voted to join the CWA. On Tuesday of last week, a majority of customer service workers at BDS Connected Solutions, that's a contractor for Google, Google Fiber, actually, they signed union cards to join the Alphabet Workers Union, part of the CWA, Local 1400, and they filed with the NLRB for representation, a representational election. And that's quite a milestone. Canadian workers at the online petition company Change.org have officially won union recognition as part of CWA in Canada. And also workers at the Daily Hampshire Gazette, members of the Pioneer Valley News Guild, News Guild CWA Local 31041, ended last year by ratifying their first contract, securing important victories after more than 2 years of negotiating with Gazette's owners. Gazette is such an anti-union organization. They had a majority interest in one of the Cleveland TV stations for a number of years. And I'll tell you, the workers were screwed over, dragged out for years, and forced to sign off on a contract that really took away a whole lot of their benefits. And that's the way they operate, like many companies. So we'll get in all of that with Frank Matthews. Dorsey Hager will be joining us later in the show. You may recall we tried to link up with him on Friday. Turns out he's got COVID. Now he's recovering, and he got it right on Christmas Eve. Right on Christmas Eve. And he struggled. He'll tell us about that. He's vaccinated too. But like so many people that are vaccinated, they're still getting it. Not as severe as those that are unvaccinated. So he'll talk about what's happening in the Columbus area. And in fact, there's a story today that the Columbus area may be the site of a giant company making semiconductor chips. As you know, there is a shortage of those chips in America, and it takes a while to ramp up. But apparently, this is a big project, and everybody's kind of secret about it. And I'm sure Dorsey, since he is so connected down there, will fill in some details on that. That and more with Dorsey Hager. That's columbusconstruction.org. Well, the Washington Post published an analysis of an under-discussed dynamic in the pandemic labor market, and that is the dramatic increase in employee resignations in the manufacturing sector. Now, you heard me talk about the Great Resignation, primarily restaurant workers, hospitality workers, warehouse workers, low paid, generally low paid. Many of them not belonging to a union or trying to get a union, and it's just not happening. But part of the increase of people leaving manufacturing is attributable to the elevated COVID risk present in a job that cannot be done remotely. Think about that. You cannot do that job remotely. The Washington Post explained the larger driver of the massive quit wave. The industry is down over 200,000 workers compared to pre-pandemic levels. Is the long-term deterioration of the quality of those manufacturing jobs. There was a time in America when you were in manufacturing, you could support your entire family, send your kids to good schools, colleges, you name it. It's not the case anymore. Although the roles are generally seen as secure and relatively high-paying, reality has been diverging from that perception for many years, says the Post. Average manufacturing wages, which had exceeded other industries for decades, are now below average, driven downwards by a decline in unionization and the implementation of two-tier wage structures. That's been going on for a while, especially when we had the financial collapse. And I know a number of unions, UAW led the way on that when they started the two-tier wage system. They had that at Kellogg's too. That was a big problem in that walkout. John Deere, same thing. So far, the country's lowest paid workers have benefited the most from COVID era wage increases. What happens in manufacturing, the Post concluded, will be telling on whether the next rung of workers will see similar gains this year. Keep our eye on that one. There's a lot of news coming out of the National Labor Relations Board. Number one, the case against Google for its anti-union activities between 2018 and 2020 took a small but meaningful step forward on Friday when an administrative law judge ruled that Google must immediately produce 180 internal documents over which the company had asserted attorney-client privilege. The documents relate to what's called Project Vivian, a Google initiative described by a senior executive as an effort to engage employees more positively and convince them that unions suck. That's what the memo says. Key aspects of Project Vivian expected to come to light in the documents include the company's decision to hire a union-busting consulting firm called IRI, its deliberations over whether to publish an anti-union op-ed, and discussions over Google employees' opposition to forced arbitration. Now, the case is not the only labor issue simmering at Google. Last Tuesday, subcontracted Google fiber technicians in Missouri filed a petition for an election with the National Labor Relations Board, and that case is expected to raise complex joint employer issues as the workers are technically employed by a local staffing firm. That's one to watch. Meanwhile, the unionization drive at Starbucks continues after the NLRB confirmed a pro-union vote at a Buffalo, New York store last month, certifying the first union at a company-owned Starbucks store. Election petitions have come in droves. As of January 4th, Business Insider noted unionization efforts at 10 stores across the country. And yesterday, workers at the West 6th Street Starbucks in Cleveland, Ohio, announced their intention to organize. How about that? That's getting a lot of play on local media, I might add. Kyla Clay is a member of the organizing committee at a Boston area Starbucks, and Kyla explained, the more people, the more stores that organize and come together, the stronger we are. Buffalo is that first domino, and we hope that the Coolidge Corner and Alston stores in the Boston area can be the next ones to unionize. And then on Friday, the National Labor Relations Board announced that it would move to vacate three Trump-era decisions: ExxonMobil Research and Engineering, Marathon Petroleum, and CVS Pharmacy, in which former Republican board member William Emanuel took part despite alleged financial conflicts of interest. Check this out. According to documents released by the board on Friday, created during an investigation by NLRB Inspector General David Berry, Mr. Emanuel owned shares in ExxonMobil. He also owned shares in Marathon and CVS and other companies that had cases before the board. And he did not recuse himself from the cases. But he maintained these investments even after being warned by ethics officers about potential conflicts of interest. The board said that the cases should be redecided, but no action will be taken until the parties are given adequate time to file their briefs. Yeah. Ethics violations, big time. And one more here before we break. The impasse between the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago authorities came no closer to a resolution over the weekend as the mayor, Lori Lightfoot, rejected a proposal by the union to return to in-person instruction on January 18th. The best, safest place for kids to be is in school, she said in a joint statement released over the weekend. Students need to be back in person as soon as possible, and we will not relent. Now, this response came just minutes after the union announced its compromise proposal to return to classrooms later this month, in which it relinquished its prior demand that students produce negative tests before returning to class, despite vast disparities in vaccination rates among students within the city. They also said teachers were willing to return to school buildings yesterday, but not for in-person instruction. They were going to do that remotely. Keep our eye on that one. That's getting a lot of national attention. All right, we're going to break. Frank Matthews on behalf of the CWA coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. Also want to plug a virtual gathering that's going to take place this Sunday and Monday. Monday is Martin Luther King Day. And the AFL-CIO is sponsoring a civil and human rights conference on those 2 days. The theme of the conference is honoring our past and protecting our future. History tells us where we've been, and it shows us the path for moving forward. The conference will challenge us to look to the future, to ask and answer how we can build a multiracial, progressive labor movement reflective of America's changing workforce. So if you want to get some more information, you want to join that virtual, just go to aflcio.org. Get all the information there, aflcio.org. That's January 16th and 17th. So that's this coming Sunday and Monday. Right now, let's go to line number one. Welcome a dear friend and a longtime contributor of America's Workforce. That would be Mr. Frank Matthews, Administrative Director, CWA District 4. CWA-union.org. And if you go to that website, this union is on a roll. Organizing, organizing, organizing. It's a new day in America, no doubt about that. Hey, Mr. Matthews, welcome back to the show and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year and good afternoon, Flash. Thanks for the... Yeah, it is an exciting time. And we've talked in the past this... one thing this pandemic and coming out of it, I think, is going to prove, and when we were in the midst of it, is that those that had a voice at the workplace and those that had the protection of a labor union fared far better and will fare far better coming out of this pandemic. So it's exciting. Got a lot of groups reaching out.
You know, there's two things that happen here, Frank. You got the pandemic, as you mentioned, and then you got Joe Biden. You got a union-friendly president. You got a union-friendly National Labor Relations Board. And I call them worker-centric because the rulings coming out of the NLRB, they've leveled the playing field. They've leveled the playing field for workers. So they paved the way for them to organize. And we're seeing pockets of organizing all around the country. I was talking earlier about this this group. What is it called? AT&T. Can you fill me in on that one? Oh yeah,
the IHX workers, AT&T at the home folks. Yeah, they're just exploding around the country and real, you know, in fighting for a voice, you know, on the job. Brand new organizing. You know, they're. It's pretty special and pretty incredible, but it's really goes, you know, right along with what's going on. These are the AT&T and home experts, and here in our district, which, you know, we have the five states, we're seeing in Chicago or in the Illinois and in Michigan right now, the Detroit Southfield area, the growth and the organizing and the fighting for a voice in the workplace, and they're winning. They're getting recognized on the job. They're working on first contracts, and it's just, you know, as I said before, it's people are realizing that you know, it is a good time. You mentioned Joe Biden. Elections matter. We say that all the time. I mean, that's what VP Hinton here in our district with CWA. That's pretty much her mantra is, you know, elections matter. You know, we have our own Jennifer Abruzzo, who's part of the DOL, and that would never happen if Joe Biden weren't there. There would never be a general counsel for any group within the government with such strong labor, particularly CWA background, as her, unless Joe Biden was there. And you're right, the rulings are coming out. There were a lot of anti-labor and anti-worker rulings that came out during the Trump administration that were initiated by the administration, not even by say cases that were filed once the Trump group took over in D.C. They actually went back through and looked at some past rulings that were labor friendly, and it was like, oh, okay, now we're in. Let's see how we can tilt the playing field, as you said, and that's the perfect way to summarize it. We can tilt the playing field toward companies and CEOs and away from the workers. And you know, now because of Joe Biden, everything is not so much tilted in our favor, but all working folks in this country have ever asked for is a level playing field. Yep. We just don't want to be playing against a stacked deck. And you know, unfortunately, so many times that's what it turns into. And it's just very refreshing. That's what's so important about all these bills, like the PRO Act and all that coming out, that all that is designed to level the playing field. And we're getting there, and folks are definitely realizing the value of the unions because of the organizing and the calls we get every day from folks saying things like, hey, you know, I got to, you know, during the pandemic, or, you know, we saw major loss and major layoffs during the pandemic, but the company that does the same thing next door, they were able to maintain their workforce and their union, and we aren't. And hey, how did that happen? And it's because those folks had a voice at the job, and mm-hmm. before they could do anything negative, the companies would come to the, you know, to labor, to the union, and we work something out, and we find a way that we can all get through this together. And instead of initially making the first move as, okay, let's put it all on the back of the workers and let's make the workers suffer the most. But that's basically it. But it's a good time, Flash, and we're very, very excited.
And there's the ethics challenge. Frank, I was reading earlier about the NLRB announcing it's going to move to vacate three Trump-era decisions, ExxonMobil, Marathon, and CVS. You know why? Because the board member at the time, William Emanuel, and Trump stacked the board with union busters, all right? But this guy owns stock in all three of those companies, and he was ruling.
Yeah.
On decisions.
Not even, like I said, not even through cases. It's just proactively going out to overturn things that, you know, that would be the equivalent of a judge being elected a judge and going back and saying, you know, all the cases that were held in this court previously, let's look at the ones that we didn't like.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it's so good point.
Ethically challenged. Let me put it that way.
Challenge.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, you touched on the PRO Act, and I have to salute the CWA because it's all over the homepage. All over the homepage here. And I know you want to talk about voting rights, which is really, really important. But the PRO Act, I'm hoping, and I know Biden's talking today about voting rights, but we got to get moving on the PRO Act here. And I know those of you listening right now, if you go to the CWA homepage, CWA-union.org, you can get activated here, push your members of Congress. And Congress has no problem. It's in the Senate that we have to deal with on this whole situation. But all the Frank, just think about this. All the organizing that's going on now, do you realize what would happen if we had the PRO Act on top of that? Can you believe that?
That's the one thing that's holding back work groups, and that businesses don't hide it. They like the fact that a member might be scared to organize or have a voice in the workplace. You know, that's when you run into these groups that want to organize, the first thing out of their mouth is, "Hey, I'm worried about the company firing me or my boss putting me on weekends because I'm part of this group," kind of a thing. That's exactly what the PRO Act would prevent in a nutshell. It's the anti-labor and the retaliation and the different things like that, that against somebody wanting to organize. And it goes to prove the benefit of the union, or why would a company spend multi-millions of dollars to hire an anti-labor law firm to come in and try to squash an organizing drive if it didn't make that much of a difference in their employees' lives, or it did not put a little more say in the workplace with those employees? They're afraid of it. They're afraid of employees organizing and they have a word. They want it to be again where, it's mother may I at work, and these employers can come in and just, regardless of performance, lay off whoever they want. Keep their brother-in-law, even if he's the worst employee, kind of a deal. They want, I use the term robber baron days, where it's like we're begging, like Oliver Twist with our bowl of gruel for anything, at the workplace. They like that. But I think employees, particularly through this pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, are saying, you know what, we've got lives. We need to make a living wage. We're tired of seeing all the top bonuses go to the CEOs and the stock buybacks while all of our employees are still sitting here at or just above minimum wage, working three jobs. I think there's a different mentality out there and people are wising up to the fact that a lot of these corporations are really taking advantage of employees, and these corporations don't want people to have a voice and to be united. And that's America. I mean, we saw, America did more in this country from the 30s through the 70s and 80s when 30% of the folks were organized. We bought more houses, we bought more cars. People were pulled up from poverty into the middle class. It built the middle class. Why would any politician or any company want to end that? I mean, that makes America stronger. That makes us stronger. When there's a vital economy in a community, when people have money to go buy gas and go to the hardware store and go to the grocery store and send their kids to college, that builds America. And these politicians that don't support these kind of initiatives but will give a corporation millions of dollars to move a job to Mexico, it just baffles me. And I think people are tired of it, quite honestly, Flash.
I hear you. Frank Matthews joining us on our live line, as he does each and every month. He's Administrative Director, CWA District 4, 5 states in the Midwest. We'll continue our talk with him. We'll talk about voting rights. Later in the show, Dorsey Hager will be joining us on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget you can check us out on 6 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Frank Matthews, Administrative Director of the Communication Workers of America, joining us on our live line. Let's talk about voting rights. Today, Biden and Kamala Harris are talking about getting rid of the filibuster, which could pave the way for some sweeping and much-needed legislation, making it easier, let me repeat that, easier and not more difficult to vote, as we're seeing in so many states in the country. So, Frank, talk to me about this legislation and the role of the CWA. Go ahead.
Well, we're all in. We recognize the fact that there's a reason that the politicians on the anti-worker side, on the GOP side, in this case, aren't supporting this. They saw an election the last time where more people were given the opportunity to vote than ever before. And the objective here isn't and I think I've used this term before, it's voter selection is what they're trying. They're trying to limit voting. And you know, you see a bunch of commercials now where, you know, they try to make it, it's not about IDs, it's not about, what this is about is people having access to the ballot and basically election day not being slanted towards those that don't have to work. We should be making elections easier for people to vote. We should be pushing online registration. We should be pushing any way we can to give everybody a voice in this country. There's not a voter fraud problem in this country. That's been proven. That's the mantra of these folks that, you know, this prevents voter fraud. When you haven't had voter fraud and they've been unable to prove it, who is busting down the door so they can go vote or vote twice? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know of anybody. I don't know that it's been proven. I know the ones in the last election, the only media I've seen were not folks that you would figure would be voting for Biden that they caught trying to vote twice, and it was like maybe a handful. So it's basically a solution they've come up with in search of a problem, and there is no problem. You know, the Voting Rights Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act was passed in the House. It's going to the Senate, or it's in the Senate, and it's under debate right now. We're hoping it gets passed within the next week or so. You know, this filibuster has just been such a hindrance to debate in the Senate. You know, it is a crapshoot for for lack of a better term, both parties have been secure with it because, you know, even if your party's not in control, you kind of feel like you are the party in control because, hey, all I got to do is, you know, as long as 60 people don't vote on cloture, nothing's going to happen. And it basically, the filibuster, which is not in the Constitution, which was actually put in during Jim Crow days to suppress minority votes and to extend slavery, is a vote that basically gridlocks the Senate. And, you know, it's the thing about it is, and I said it's a crapshoot because what this does is it makes elections matter. If a party is in control and the American people have selected that a certain party has control of the Senate, they shouldn't be held up, if you will. The will of the people shouldn't be held up by one politician in one small state, let's say. You know, so basically the idea is, it could come back, say 20 years from now, when, you know, both parties have control of the Senate, that it's not necessarily worker friendly. You know, it could come back and actually work in the favor of the other party. But my thoughts on it personally are that, given the power to make the changes that are needed in this country for working Americans and for the majority of Americans, once both houses work to the benefit of workers and to the benefit of what's good for this country, not just what's good for CEOs, not what's good for millionaires, then the majority of the American people are going to say, hey, why would we ever want to go back to supporting those that only care about millionaires and CEOs? But right now, that filibuster is keeping us, in my opinion, from experiencing all that we can as workers and all that we can as a result of that Biden election. And let's just hope we had thought originally that it was going to go with maybe the PRO Act, then Build Back Better would be passed, and then the voting rights. It's actually kind of flopped on us that we're hoping that the voting rights gets passed, you know, within the next week or so. Here, we'll address Build Back Better right after that, and then we'll get to the PRO Act, you know. And it's a shame that things have become so political that the Senate can only attack one issue at a time. We ought to be doing things quickly to benefit workers, but we're excited. You know, voter rights are under attack in this country. 19 states have passed 34 laws restricting access to voting, like limiting early voting, limiting voting polling places, limiting the way you can vote, and there's a reason for that. And I always kind of joke at the end of the day, I said, all these folks that want to limit how we vote on Election Day, none of them are also calling for Election Day to be a national holiday. You know what? There's a lot of people in this country that can't vote on that Tuesday. Right. A lot of working families in this country that mom and dad are working two and three jobs. The folks on the other side know what they're doing. They don't want working folks voting at the ballot. And like I said before, we need to stop this voter selection from happening. So, and that's what, quite honestly, what these anti-voting laws are designed to do, is select who can go to the polls and who can't go to the polls.
And that's exactly why they didn't want mail-in ballots, because that allowed working people to vote. Well, Frank, there's two pieces of legislation here that I want to call attention to. That is the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act of 2021 and the Freedom to Vote Act. Two very good pieces of legislation that need to be passed, and hopefully we'll see that day come. All right, my friend, we're going to leave it on that note. Great job, as usual. You take care, stay safe, and we'll do this again next month, okay, my brother?
Take care, Flash.
All right, quick break. Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number two. And I tell you, I was worried and scared on Friday because one of my most reliable guests, Mr. Dorsey Hager, executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, was not answering my calls. And I figured, well, they probably called him in on a job because there's a shortage of workers. Well, it turns out that he is recovering from what so many people are recovering from in the country today, and that would be COVID. Dorsey Hager, now you're okay now, right? What's the story here? Go ahead.
100%. I was, you know, like they say in baseball terms, I was day-to-day there for a minute, but aren't we all? And I'm off the disabled list. I'm ready to go. Put me in the lineup 100%. Won't hurt the team playing injured. I'm ready to be out there. So,
okay. Okay,
everything's good, but you're right. There's so many people I know in Cuyahoga County and in Franklin County that are fighting this thing as the positivity rates go up. And I had the unfortunate, I tested positive on Christmas Eve, which obviously didn't make the family very happy. So it was a very lonely holiday break for me.
Well, that's one gift that Santa didn't have to bring you. No doubt about that.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Oh, my God. Well, that's good that you're okay. And I'll tell you, there's a big story in the Plain Dealer today about the possibility of a semiconductor chip factory happening in the Columbus area. I don't know what you know about this. I'm sure there's some buzz going on. Even Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, is not saying very much on this. But, Dorsey, what do you know? What are you hearing?
So, what it appears to me is about 6 months ago in the summer, I had a preliminary meeting with a couple people in Central Ohio, and they were talking about a large manufacturing plant coming to Central Ohio. We anticipated that was Amgen, which you and I have talked about on this show, which has broken ground already and is going full go. And Amgen is a pharmaceutical company. They're going to do manufacturing and packaging. The first building is going to be around, I think, about $800 million, and there's some more buildings to come after that. But that's not what the meeting was about, obviously. It's about this potential chip plant. You know, there's a huge shortage of chips and microchips throughout the United States and North America. A lot of it has hampered some of our car production and some other things. So I think that the meeting was kind of preliminary about that last summer. And, you know, we've talked about this on your show. When we have these meetings, everything's real hush-hush because I'm sure they're looking at tax breaks, tax abatements, tax incentives. They're looking at other areas of the country where they can possibly build and do the work as well. And the two questions that they always have for us here in Columbus and Central Ohio is, do you have the people to build it, and do you have the people to maintain it once it's built? And obviously that answer is yes to both, as, you know, we have some of the most safe and skilled people here in the trades in Central Ohio. So I've got another follow-up call with some people at One Columbus today, my good friend Chip Holcomb over there at One Columbus. So hopefully I hope to find out more today and here in the very near future about it. But that would just go to our growing economy and our booming construction economy down here in Central Ohio. You know, so many projects you and I have talked about, Amgen, which we talked about, OSU Medical Center, the Hilton Tower, the North Market Tower. So there's a lot of, you know, plus all the Amazon, Facebook, Google, all that stuff going on, the data center work. So the future still continues to look bright here in Columbus and Central Ohio in 2022 and beyond.
That is so good to hear. So good to hear. Yeah, from what I'm reading, it's going to be a giant facility. And I believe they're working on one. I think they might have even sealed the deal in Texas on one. So I like that because, you know, the bottom line, too many of those jobs have left our shores. When you think about that, I mean, we're reliant on China and various parts of the world for these semiconductors, and that's got to stop. You bring them back here. We know we have the skilled labor. We can get it done. And this way we won't have the crazy shortage that we're dealing with right now. So that's really, really good news.
You're absolutely right. You know, we talk here in Central Ohio, and I talk to friends of mine and people who deal in different industries about the supply chain issue. And it goes back to, and I think we learned this 2 years ago at the beginning of the pandemic when we were looking for masks and safety supplies. We were having shortages, and guess what? Supply chain issues don't exist if you make things at home. Things that are made at home can't get stuck on cargo ships out in the Pacific. So,
Dorsey, if you don't mind, I want to change the subject a little bit. And one of the things we were supposed to talk about on Friday was Christmas Cares Union Shares. I just like the rhyme on that. Can you explain to our listeners what that was all about?
Yeah, so the Central Labor Council, the IBEW, the plumbers and pipe fitters, the great leadership by Kenny Davis, Pat Hook, Chris Evans, and the guys over. This goes way, way back. And like I said, the Central Labor Council and Mark Fluharty going all the way back to Walt Workman. What we do is we volunteer with St. Stephen's. It's a nonprofit here on the near northeast side of Columbus. And we spend a weekend before Christmas with them. And we work close with the Kroger Company and obviously other people that donate food and items and stuff like that. And it's turkeys, it's staples, you know, it's food staples. And any family that's in need, and it's all drive up now, obviously, because of COVID, but they can drive up, they can get some of these items so that they have a good Christmas dinner, but also not a good, healthy, warm meal on Christmas Day, but also enough food to last them throughout the week as they spend time with family and stuff. And just, you know, one of the many things that we do, especially members of organized labor, to get together to work with people in the community who maybe aren't as fortunate as many others, or maybe have been left behind a little bit, and try to do what we can to help them out so that way they can have an enjoyable Christmas as well. So it's a great program. Like I said, Mark Fluharty, Kenny Davis, Pat Hook, Chris Evans, the IBEW guys, plumbers and pipe fitters here locally, the Central Labor Council, they all do a heck of a job getting all the food donated, all the food packaged, all the food wrapped, and then setting up everything so that way that we can get that dispersed. Another shout out goes to our Franklin County Sheriff, Dallas Baldwin. A lot of his deputies volunteer their time up there to make sure there's no issues with traffic, everything moves smoothly, and everybody gets in there and gets out of there in a timely fashion. But it's a really busy weekend. Usually falls on a cold, wet, and rainy weekend, as we have a lot of those here in Central Ohio that time of year. But everybody does a great job. IBEW gets a lot of apprentices to volunteer. There's a lot of people in the community that volunteer as well. So it's just a great thing that that we do every year, and it's very successful.
And much needed, I might add. You also wanted to talk about a labor education series. I'd like to hear what that entailed.
Yeah, so John Wentz, who's a labor attorney here in town, and Sarah Ingalls, and I know John's been on your show in the past. He was so instrumental in helping us getting the wage theft ordinance. You know, Sarah Ingalls sits on Franklin County Democratic Central Committee. We also have members of labor that sit on the Central Committee as well. And one of the things that they've talked about the last couple of years is that electeds on both sides of the aisle, and also staffers and people that work in their offices, you know, they know the importance of organized labor, but they may not understand the importance of organized labor and the role that they play in the community. So John and myself, Mark Fluharty from the Central Labor Council, and Sarah Ingalls, sat down about 6 months ago and started developing a curriculum for some of these labor education classes. And they're going to be held quarterly throughout this year, and we're going to cover all facets of organized labor as it pertains to Central Labor Council unions and public sector unions, but also the building trades unions. Started off, we had our first class right before Christmas. It was well attended. A lot of electeds, a lot of staffers from City Hall. And we started off with just the basics. We talked about right to work. We talked about the importance of not being a right to work state. We talked about some of the things that organized labor does to work with the legislature to educate them on right to work and how harmful it is to the state. And then we segue into some other things, get a little bit deeper and talk about prevailing wage, talk about how, you know, unions uplift a lot of people, specifically people of color and females. You know, this is tried and true. When people of color or when females belong to a labor union, their wages and benefits, just like everybody else, are obviously much higher. So it was a great class. We took about an hour, hour and a half. We were really, really impressed with how engaged everybody was, the questions that were asked, the comments that were made, and everything. So I think John and Sarah and Mark did a great job, and it was really good, and it was interesting to have, and it was nice to have a lot of those people in that setting where we could educate them on some of the important things, and hopefully they take that back to their jobs, to City Hall and stuff, and they understand that when they're dealing with some of these issues or some of these things that are coming before them, how important the role that organized labor plays in all of it to help uplift everybody in the community.
Well, it sounds like something they need to teach in high school, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I can remember going back to high school when we took civics and government and stuff. They talked about, you know, the importance of unions and the coal miners' strike and all that stuff. And I don't think a lot of that stuff gets talked about anymore, which is really sad. But the curriculum we're developing is really good. It's very thought out. It's very useful. It's very practical. And we're also working to market it as well, be able to put it online so that way people can revisit it. But we heard nothing but good things about it, and it was very interesting. And especially, you know, like I said, we have a lot of electeds and staffers, and I know you and I talked about this a few years ago after the 2016 election. You know, in right-to-work states across the country, Democrats are put at a six-point disadvantage in elected office and in the elections on all levels, whether it's school board, whether it's a township trustee, whether, you know, whatever. So if you think about the 2016 election, you know, Hillary Clinton lost that election by 82,000 votes across three states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And two things that happened that had a great effect on that election between 2012 and 2016 was Michigan and Wisconsin both went right to work. So you think of how razor thin and how close those elections were, and what a different outcome it would have been if we could have protected right to work in those two states. And when you start talking about those things with a lot of these electeds and a lot of these staffers, you know, that really hits home, and they understand that.
I tell you, I'm real excited. You keep me posted on all the players on that, and maybe we'll get some here on the show to talk more about the labor education series. I tell you, you can't talk about that enough. You can't do enough on that. So good stuff there. Good to hear. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, columbusconstruction.org, Twitter handle, BuildCentralOH. Kind of an abbreviated version. We'll do more next month. Okay, my brother?
All right. Sounds good. Let's forge ahead and get through January and all this cold and snowy weather, and hopefully come out on the bright side here in early February when we talk again.
Amen, brother. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we got the stagehands in Indianapolis and the ironworkers in Tennessee. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.